Wrecking Ball Radio.
This is Davin's Den.
And we are back. Thank you for hanging out with us, Davin, on Davin's Den. Pip is here, and Kevin Israel is here, playing the part of Joe Curry. It's nice to have Kevin with us. Had some fun talking about Florida and comedy and tours and daddyhood and all that good stuff. But now it's time to talk about something fun, like abortion.
Jesus, what a setup.
Yes.
Segway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Listen, if I'm bringing up abortion, it's because I think it's a really interesting story. I got this one this week, and then next week there's a story where a woman is, and we're not going to get into it now, but where a woman has to bring a baby to term, even though the baby's not going to be born with a skull. So just some really interesting... You heard that story, right, Kevin?
I had not heard that story, no.
That's something for you to research. In your free time, when you just want to kick back and relax. All right.
Yeah.
Some light reading.
Yes. Jane Doe, 22B, you sank my battleship, a 16-year-old in the care of Florida child welfare authorities, lacks the maturity to be allowed to terminate her 10-week pregnancy, an Escambia County judge said. She'll have to grow up fast. Under a ruling handed down by an appeals court on Monday, Jane may be forced to become a mother. Acting upon Jane's written request, a Pensacola judge ruled that Jane, as she identified in court papers, was not, quote, sufficiently mature to decide whether to terminate her pregnancy. Jane is parentless. A ruling this week by the First District Court of Appeals in the Panhandle said she lives with a relative and is overseen by an appointed guardian. About 10 weeks into her pregnancy, Jane sought a judge's order approving an abortion under a state law restricting the rights of minors to the procedure. Jane's guardian, who is not named, agreed with the teen's decision, the order says. The order she sought is called judicial bypass. Such orders generally involve minors who are reluctant to seek parental permission. Escambia Judge, Circuit Judge Jennifer J., always a name, Friedkowitz, rejected Jane's request. The order offers little detail regarding Friedkowitz's decision, except the judge believed that Jane lacked the maturity, a requirement under the statute, to choose an abortion. Jane's plight comes amid seismic changes and nationwide in the battle over women's rights to abortion or even contraception. In June, the Supreme Court reversed the landmark Roe v. Wade decision by a 6-3 vote. The court's ruling set the stage for a flurry of legislative activity across the United States as lawmakers in mostly Republican-controlled states began chipping away at, and in some cases eliminating, abortion rights. One Supreme Court Justice, Clarence Thomas, suggested the court should consider allowing states to restrict other rights that rested upon the same privacy foundation as the Roe decision, including the right to same-sex marriage. The order by a 3-judge panel of the First District Court of Appeal in Pensacola was signed by Judges Harvey L. J. III, Rachel E. Nordby, and Scott McCarr. A spokeswoman for the Department of Children, Families, and Those Care, in whose care Jane apparently remains until her 18th birthday, said only that the agency was not involved in the court case and that administrators respect Judge Friedkowitz's ruling and recognize her decision to prioritize the health and safety of Floridians as she performs her duties to the state. What's so upsetting about this case is that the minor seeking an abortion is nearly 17 years old, parentless, and has suffered trauma, said retired Miami-Dade child welfare judge Jerry B. Cohen. She now risks re-traumatization by being forced to give birth to a child that she neither wants nor can afford. Linda Bell, a former Miami-Dade County Commissioner who moved to Tallahassee and lobbies for Florida Rights to Life, commended the judges for rejecting the teen's request, saying that courts have generally been too quick to facilitate abortions for minors. The judge in this case, she said, likely heard something in her conversation with Jane that raised a red flag. And it's now time to support her, Bell said, or Jane. It's time to love her. She's a 16-year-old. She has lots of life ahead of her. I'm hoping someone takes her to a good crisis pregnancy center and helps her and shows her the love that she deserves. I hope somebody else does it. She needs love. I hope somebody steps up because it ain't going to be me. All right. Both Frieda Kovitz's original order and the appeals court's affirmation of it leave Jane an off-ramp. Jane may return to Frieda Kovitz's court again and ask the judge to reconsider her ruling. But under Florida statutory scheme, Jane will be barred from having the procedure when the pregnancy reaches 15 weeks. If Jane is permitted to leave the state, which is uncertain given the lack of clarity over her status as a ward of the state, she likely will be unable to terminate the pregnancy through use of medication. She would then require a surgical procedure, said Cohen, who had helped found the Women's Emergency Network earlier in her career to raise money for women with unwanted pregnancies. Because the records of Jane's case appear to be sealed, little is known about the girl, who is just shy of her 17th birthday. The appeals court decision said she is pursuing a GED with involvement in a program designed to assist young women who have experienced trauma in their lives by providing educational support and counseling. Complicating the ordeal, the order said, was the recent death of one of Jane's friends. In a separate opinion, Judge Scott McCarr wrote that reading between the lines, it appears that the trial court wanted to give the minor, who was under extra stress due to a friend's death, additional time to express a keener understanding of the consequences of terminating a pregnancy. This makes some sense given that the minor, at least at one point, says she was open to having a child, but later changed her view after considering her inability to care for a child in her current station in life, McCarr added. In her ruling, Frieda Kovitz described Jane as credible and forthcoming when they met in the judge's chambers to discuss the procedure. The judge wrote that Jane showed at times that she is stable and mature enough to make this decision. And according to McCarr, who read the transcript of the hearing, Jane researched her options, obtained information at a clinic, and sought to understand the consequences of terminating her pregnancy. The trial court noted that the minor acknowledges she is not ready for the emotional, physical, or financial responsibility of raising a child and has valid concerns about her ability to raise a child, McCarr wrote. Frieda Kovitz ruled against the teen, writing that Jane's evaluation of the benefits and consequences of her decision is wanting. The judge wrote in her order, however, that Jane may be able at a later date to adequately articulate her request, like when the kid's 10, and the court may reevaluate its decision at that time, McCarr wrote in his opinion. All right, see, here's what I don't understand with this. So you don't have the maturity to terminate a pregnancy, but you do have the maturity to raise another human being? I mean, that's what the statute seems to say. I don't understand that. Okay, well, okay, okay, I guess we all agree on that absurdity.
I mean, the whole thing, it's Florida. Florida is making its point. All these states are going to be making their point where they stand on the ruling, on the Dobb ruling. And Florida is saying that 16 is too young. The age of consent in Florida is 18. In Jersey, oddly enough, it's 16. So some states are saying 16, you can consent to have sex, but in some states, 16 isn't old enough to get an abortion. So it's lunacy. The whole thing is just lunacy. It's hard. I read the story and I was trying to come up with like funny witticisms, and there's just nothing. It's just a sad reflection of what's happening across the country.
I get the whole right to life thing and all, but what about these lives? It's like everybody, oh, I hope somebody helps them and everything. But it doesn't seem like there's a safety net for this girl after she gives birth to this child. It's like, oh, you're on your own. And, you know, we know the right wants to cut social programs, the safety net and everything. So what? Is she supposed to live on the street? It's like there's no answer for this. It's just like, well, you know, we want the babies to be delivered and I guess you're on your own. Fuck it. It's not good enough.
God will help them, Davin.
What?
God will come in and help them.
Who'll come in? You'll come in?
No, God.
Oh, God. Oh. God, well.
Now, that's the irony, the tragedy, actually, of the whole thing, is that, you know, these people who are right-to-lifers that are so concerned that at all costs the fetus go full term do not care about people after they're born. Do not care about the people that are already here. Do not care about the rights of the mother. Do not care.
Listen, I don't think I would agree with it, but at least if the state had said, listen, we got this. We're going to make sure that she's taken care of. She's going to continue her education. We're going to help her financially with the baby. You know, if there was anything that said that, I still wouldn't agree with it, but I go, all right, you know what? At least the two of them have a shot. But nobody's even saying that. Well, hopefully somebody comes in. Hopefully somebody acts mighty white and does the right thing. It's like, are you kidding me?
Around, I'd say probably 10 years from now, Somebody's going to do a fascinating study, assuming that the law stays, everything stays the way it is right now. Somebody's going to do a fascinating study on the impact of this in the state. And there's, it's almost like they're setting up a test case scenario. Because you have half the state that are banning abortion or severely stricting abortion, and then you have half the states that are permitting abortion in the ways that we've always had it. And you're going to be able to say, look at what's happened to these states and these economies and these socioeconomic systems, and look at, and versus these other states. And I think there's going to be, I think we can all predict what it's going to bear out. You know, it's not a stretch of the imagination. But these were very short-sighted, and that's the problem with a lot of these kind of religiously led and belief-led legislation. It's very short-sighted. It's very, this is how I feel, so just do it, because it says so in a book that was written 2,000 years ago. And nobody says, well, but how does it affect now? That's not what matters. This is what my religion says. And then you end up with a mess, and that's what will happen. 10 years we'll be able to point fingers.
But the same religion, doesn't the same religion like pretty much preach taking care of the poor? Where is that? Like, if you're going to force this child to have a child, they're just too quick to do it. And what's interesting is the relative, who I guess is not the guardian, but is the relative who she's affiliated with, is fine with the decision. So, I mean, so we have a relative and we have the girl versus a judge. How does the judge get right over, like, what these people want? She's not on her own. She has a guardian, the state is her guardian, and I guess there's another family member. How does that not matter at all?
Well, it's the whole thing of legislating that the government has anything to do with the medical decisions of a family. And it is a medical decision. It's her body and her life.
Well, I got to tell you.
Until you can fully grow a baby outside of a woman's body, it's nobody's business. That's just the way it is. And I tell you what, when we can't do that, it's going to be a weird time. But as long as babies are born the way they've always been born, it's the woman's body, and you you can get into this, and I've had this discussion with people at all sorts of levels where you can get into this. Well, at what point? This is like a favorite law school debate, especially in constitutional law. At what point is a fetus viable? At what point is it alive? And you can have that. You can make that moral, that kind of argument, and that scientific versus moral judgment. When is it a person, or when is it? But you know what? You have to take all of that out of it and say, "This is whatever that is. It's a woman's body. We know it's a woman's body, and we know it's a medical decision, like Biff said. And that's all. And that's everything else. We're parsing words and trying to understand things that we'll never understand. But what we do know is that it's a woman's body. This is happening in a woman. It's a medical decision. It's up to that woman, and that's it. And you should step away. But people just can't help themselves.
All right, let's do some School of Fools.
School of Fools.
A black parent filed a civil rights lawsuit last week against the Los Angeles Unified School District and Board of Education, saying that a cotton field was set up at an elementary school in 2017 that was intended to teach students about the experiences of slaves. Rashunda Pitts said her 14-year-old daughter, who is referred to as SW in the lawsuit, experienced emotional distress as a result of the project at Laurel Span School that her social justice teacher said was to help students gain a real-life experience as to what the African-American slave had endured. The suit also names the school's then principal and social justice teacher as defendants, since the project Laurel Span School was closed and a new school, Laurel Cinematic Arts Creative Tech Magnet, was created in its place. How liberal. Pitts said that in September 2017, she noticed her daughter had become very quiet and reserved when she used to vibrantly share her day with her mother. The lawsuit states, you know what? I'm thinking my daughter might have picked cotton. My daughter might have been, because she's very quiet and reserved. She don't talk to me anymore.
She's been picking cotton for years at this rate.
Apparently, there's somebody I can sue. I had no idea. I mean, everybody said it was a teen thing, but maybe it's a slave thing. I don't know. One day, As Pitts was dropping off her daughter on campus, she saw a cotton field in the front of the school and called the office to speak with the school's principal, Amy Diaz, who was unavailable, according to the lawsuit. Pitts spoke with assistant principal Brian Wisniewski, who explained that SW's class was reading Frederick Douglass's autobiography and that the cotton field was created so students could have a real-life experience of slavery, the lawsuit says. After Pitts expressed her disappointment with the project, Wisniewski agreed and said the school's principal would reach out to Pitts, the lawsuit states. Diaz listened to Pitts' request for the cotton field to be taken down in 24 hours, but said the school couldn't accommodate such a quick turnaround as the kids can't pick cotton that quickly. Saying... What? No? No? Okay. Saying you could aim for the end of the week or the following week, but couldn't make any promises according to the lawsuit. Unless we whip these little motherfuckers, then they'll pick quickly. What? No? No?
Okay. We got a crop to get in. We can't just raise this whole field.
Seriously. We get what you're saying, lady, but these shirts aren't going to, you know, make themselves. We're going to pick the cotton here, and we're going to send the shirts to Malaysia, and you'll be happy. Just bear with us.
Did they also have a freight train that went around the school, and they put yellow stars on all the students and load them in and just drive around?
You know, it's a shame. It was in the offing, yeah. But the school went out of business just before that dream could happen. You know, Kevin, I don't appreciate your nasty Jew jokes. Anyway. Wisniewski and Diaz.
Like my Jew joke, damn it.
Wisniewski and Diaz didn't immediately return a request for comment. An LAUSD spokesman said the district didn't comment on ongoing or pending litigation. Pitt's daughter also said that her social justice teacher required students to, quote, pick cotton, and that she herself was not forced to do so, but had to watch other students complete the project while she cared for other crops in the garden, according to the lawsuit. Pitt's daughter said she was afraid to tell her about the project because she didn't want retaliation from teachers or bad grades. The school didn't obtain permission from parents in order for their students to participate in the project, nor were they informed about the project's existence, the suit alleges. The school district later released...
Wasn't required to pick cotton, because she could work in the house with some of the others.
Are you gonna be a problem here, Missy? We can send you into the house, but you know there'll be repercussions for this type of lippy talk.
Oh, my God.
You know, back in my day, you fucking picked cotton and you were happy about it. Anyway... The school district later released a statement to a reporter stating that it regrets that an instructional activity in the garden at Laurel School was construed as culturally insensitive. According to the lawsuit, we will now grow marijuana. Tending to the garden, where a variety of fruits and vegetables and other plants grow, is a school-wide tradition that has been in place for years and has never been used as a tool to reenact historical events, according to the statement. Yeah, but you know what? With the budgets being cut what they are, they're doing more with less. When school administrators became aware of parents' concerns about the cotton plant, they responded immediately by removing the plant. Pitts alleges that the district lied to cover up its conduct and that the statement directly contradicts the explanation that was given to her by the school's assistant principal about the project. As a result, Pitts said her daughter was discriminated against on the basis of her race by not being forced to pick cotton. Okay. SW has suffered extreme emotional distress. The lawsuit says she'll only wear polyester now. She has uncontrollable anxiety attacks and has experienced bouts of depression when she thinks about the cotton picking project. All right, listen, first of all, I don't think you fully get the slave experience just by one activity, first of all, with the cotton picking.
That was basically it. You were just on the field picking cotton. It was fine. Everything else was fine.
That was the problem. Like, seriously, like, unless you're going to beat them, sell them, rape them, I don't know if we really fully have the full slave experience.
Hey, they sang some songs too. Nice.
Well, you know what? That was music class. I like a good spiritual.
This is cosplay run amok.
Well, I got to tell you, my friend, you don't have any plushies if you don't have cotton. So you know.
Oh my God! It's really like you could not think of any other way to pass along this knowledge to the children.
All right. We're making fun of it. I don't think it fully gives the full experience of slavery. That being said, I refuse to believe that the act of picking cotton is inherently racist on its own merits. And the girl did not have to pick the cotton. She was allowed to tend to the peas and carrots. So it wasn't, if this, and we've read stories like this, well, the black students had to pick the cotton and the other one. If that was the case, I'd be going off, go, this is nuts. What are you doing? Everybody's picking cotton. It's called empathy. I don't think it's the best example, but it does give an idea. And like, could you do this? For instance, if the lesson was, we want to show how magnificent and important the invention of the cotton gin was by Eli Whitney. This is what people had to do, who was a black man. This is what people had to do beforehand, and then Eli Whitney came along and invented the cotton gin, and we didn't have to do this anymore. Would it be okay then?
Here's the problem. Not the problem. Here's the fact and the reality that we live in today. There are some things that you just can't touch.
But this was 2017. We were still touching in 2017.
Even in 2017, which was shockingly 5 years ago, when schools institute programs, they go through vetting processes. The fact that that nobody stood up and was like, hey, this is problematic. We could have an issue. Leaving aside the intent and what the people were thinking, just from a communication PR type standpoint, where you're putting this out there, say, hey, this could look bad. Like the story that you ended up with, the fact that this ended up actually happening and there's, you've got to defend it, blows my, where was this?
At Los Angeles County.
All what you say
is true, but I don't know if that rises to lawsuit. Like this was like a bad decision. It should have been vetted. Somebody should have seen this could be a problem. But again, lawsuit, emotional distress. I'm sorry.
Well, the end. Look, the end. That last paragraph was written by a lawyer to support their case. Every kid who graduates law school knows you have to show damage to be able to stand the case. And what's the damage? I felt bad about it. So that's what they're saying. Now you're right. Is this girl really having trauma for the rest of her life because of this? Probably not. Was it fucking tone deaf on the school's part and short-sighted and stupid and, you know, all of that? Absolutely. Nobody should have ever done that. And even to your point, Davin, because I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, that would actually be a good idea if you set up, like, show how difficult picking cotton was and then how much easier the cotton gin made it. And as I'm thinking that, this alarm went off in my head and said, no, you still can't do that. But
here's the thing. So then what we're saying, what your argument is, because they've been tending to crops for several years at this school. So what we're saying is the act of picking cotton is inherently racist. I don't see it. I don't see it.
If the act of picking cotton is inherently racist, I don't think. It's just, as Kevin said, it's really tone deaf. It's like, you know, there are certain things that are not necessarily meant bad, but it was just like we were talking about on Martin Luther King Day. They decided to have the watermelon salad as a feature for the day.
Now, I think that was Juneteenth. I think that was Juneteenth.
How stupid are you?
No, but here's the thing. I mentioned all those other horrible things that came along with slavery.
Yeah.
And it's all words in a book. This is theoretically the only thing you can do in a classroom situation to create some empathy, to understand what this was. Listen, I understand their argument. I think it's nonsense. I got to be honest. I think you have to be able to experience some things. Now, would a school ever do this again? No, but I mean, so what? So they can't pick peanuts? You know, I mean, they picked other crops. It wasn't just cotton. Every plantation wasn't tobacco and cotton. They were growing everything. They were growing corn. They were growing potatoes, growing all sorts of shit. So every time a student picks a crop, it's now racist? I can't do that. I refuse.
the Mexican kids do it.
But that's where we're headed. That's where we're headed. They're Central American, they're Mexican, it's racist. No, we're just picking veggies and plants. That's what we're doing. And if you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it. It's not like they said, oh no, we're going to get massa and we're going to whip you. Then you're going to really find out what the slave experience is. They didn't say, they go, okay, you know what, you do the rutabagas over here. That's it. Come on.
Yeah, it's too on the nose.
It looks bad. So maybe you write a letter of concern if you're that woman or that our man. Put a lawsuit. Listen, if this kid is devastated, eat a fucking Tide Pod, because life is just going to get a lot harder. I'm sorry. A 14-year-old is
a Tide Pod.
I said eat a Tide Pod. I will listen. If this kid is so damaged by the fact that she had to watch other students pick cotton, what is she gonna be? She can't even be a social justice teacher, which I can't believe that's a thing now. She can't even be, because apparently the social justice teacher is too insensitive to social justice. That's the mind blowing. This is a social justice teacher who knows all about social justice, did not see this coming.
I know, that's really stupid, but I have a hard time picturing that this kid is having that much trauma about this school activity.
Yeah.
I'm just not buying it.
I have no sympathy for this kid or this parent. I really don't. I actually feel bad for the principal that has to field this nonsense. Well, I mean, because the principal's out of a job now. That school closed, and they're still getting sued. They're still getting sued for a school that doesn't exist. And because we didn't take down the cotton field in 24 hours, because it took us a week. You know how long it took us to grow the cotton? I mean, seriously. I mean, we had to go to CVS. We had to get twigs. We had to get some Gorilla Glue. I don't mean to be racist with the Gorilla Glue, but it's the best type of glue. And we put it on the thing, and we set it up for the kids to pick cotton. And now we have to take, and we just can't do it. The kids don't work as quickly as the Chinese kids. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I think that it was poorly thought out, and I mean, perhaps, you know, the worst that would happen is you go to a school board meeting or a PTA meeting or whatever they call them now, and you know, discuss. Maybe this isn't the right way to do it. This is just a little too close. Come on. But
see, I don't think it is.
Sewing them?
I don't think
the girl's having trauma. She can't go through the gap and look at the t-shirts without wigging. Come on.
I mean, I'm trying to think of something that would be comparable. I guess doing something in the concentration camps. But I don't know if there's like a thing tied to it, like crop.
I just think, and you were kind of saying before, Devin, you can't distill a major historic atrocity to like one act to be like, this is what it was like to be. You pick some cotton now, so you get it. Like that, and I realize that that's not how it would be presented, but that's how it would be received by a large portion of our population whose ancestors did go through that. So you have to look at it, especially when in the school, especially when you're teaching something, you have to look at it and say, you know what, this doesn't smell right. This isn't gonna, you know, this
all right. But I'll tell you what, and this might make me a creep, but I remember being a 14-year-old. If I got a chance to go outside and pick anything, it could be tobacco, I didn't give a shit, pick any, or listen to my teacher drone on, sign me up to go outside and I'll pick whatever the hell you want. Because as a kid, you just want to get out of the classroom. So I mean, I don't think most of the children had this reaction. I think if this child is having such an issue, there's something going on at home. I think we're covering up issues at home, and then we're just like, oh, well, we'll sue this school because most kids want to be outside. And like I said, she didn't even have to pick the cotton. The teacher didn't even get like tough with her. We're gonna get massa here. Let me just climb up on my horse and whip you. It didn't happen. Okay, no, it's fine, whatever. Because it's a social justice teacher. It's not the shop teacher.
There's got to be a way to figure out how to teach this lesson without reenacting at least a portion of So
you know what?
Justice.
So you know
but
what?
We're not too many generations away from yet.
All right. Oh, then you know what? Then fine. We can't even have movies depicting slavery. We can't. We can't.
No.
Yeah, sure. Sure. I can't. No. It's triggering. I'm just going to tell you what happened. We're having this scene where the slaves are out in the field and they're picking crops, but now we're just going to have a black screen with words because the actors might be triggered and might have a negative emotional response if they have to act pick cotton. It's ridiculous. I can't. I sound like Joe. I think, but I think
I was going to say the part of Joe Curry tonight will be played.
Is being played by Gavin.
No, because at some point you just have to go. Okay, let them. You know what? It's like I said. It wasn't like
you know
the
what?
Kid.
And Gavin, you're right. You're right. If we lived in a utopian society where we've all gotten past it and everybody had moved on and there was no more racism. But there are people who genuinely, and I'm not saying that the lawsuit isn't necessarily frivolous, and I'm not saying that it's not ridiculous and without merit. But what I am saying is that as a school, you should realize that some people are going to be offended by this and hurt by it, and that there's going to be a repercussion. You should see it. Schools have attorneys that look over this stuff. Like regardless of the merits of the case, they should have been smart enough to say this is a bad idea, and it's putting us in a litigious situation where. And a PR nightmare.
I'm going to leave this thought out here, and then we'll move on to the next thing. Maybe the school should have seen it. But if they have to foresee every fakakta thing that might come their way, could that in some way partly explain why we have such a shortage of teachers? Because who the hell wants to go into that profession now when you can't do any, when you think you're being creative, when you're trying to make history come to life, you know, you're not trying to hurt anybody, and now you're part of a lawsuit. Who wants to go into it? For the bad pay? For the having to use your own money to buy school supplies? For what? For the nagging parents? Okay, fine. So we'll now foresee everything else, and we won't get educators now, because somebody might get offended. And again, I feel like Joe at this point, but I mean, it just blows my mind.
I love that Davin just repackaged, reenacting slavery as history.
Well, no, it is history. Slavery is been throughout all of our histories. You know, of course, it is history. They're teaching. What do you think? You don't think it was part of a history lesson? And listen, if it was just for shits and giggles,
I'm saying that the reenactment isn't necessarily. A component, a required component.
No, it's not. It's not required. What it was is a teacher was like, how can I bring history to life? How can I get these students to understand how brutal this was without really making them slaves? How can I get the white kids to understand what the black kids' ancestors went through? Oh, here's an idea, and then this happened. Like I said, if it was just all the black kids had to pick cotton and the white kids had to stand over them, I'd be on board with this. I'd be like, what are we doing? This wasn't the case.
White people have been understanding what the black people went through for years. It's called blackface and misappropriating the rap culture.
Yeah, but I don't think they were going for that here. I think they were just trying to teach empathy and brutality. I think they were, because I'll tell you what, you can listen. You can hear about the Holocaust, you can hear about slavery, you can hear about Hiroshima, but at the end of the day, it's only words, unless you meet somebody who lived through it or you get to experience a little bit. Words are just words, and increasingly with this generation of people who don't read as much, who their sensories are just coming at them on a screen all the time, this is a way to get them out of the screen, into the classroom. Look, I guess I'm in the minority on this, that's fine. It's okay, we'll move on, but... I think, but we all agree that the lawsuit's a bunch of nonsense. We just agree on whether this was should be deemed harmful or not.
No, I don't even think it's not a matter of whether or not it's deemed harmful. I think it was just a bad, essentially a bad business decision on the school to let it happen.
Oh, well clearly. Well, yes. I mean, here we are. So I think that's true.
Half a brain who's lived in this half of the century could foresee that being a nightmare.
Yeah.
Well,
look, I have my sister's a teacher. She's always trying to find new and creative ways to engage her students and to make them interested. And I get it, but I never in my wildest dreams would I be like, "Hey, here's an interesting way to do it." because I'd know that it would just, I'm just going to get mud on my face. And then I'm, never mind, that was a bad choice of words.
Certainly was. You know what? You know what the solution is? Here's the solution.
Oh my God. I'm just going to get mud on.
Yeah, yeah. I let that one go. He can dig his own grave. I'll tell you, these kids won't be digging it. But you know what we should do? Here's how we cover this. From now on, let's not teach slavery when we're dealing history. Let's just whitewash it so we don't have these uncomfortable conversations. That seems like the best choice. Let's go to Nazi news now. Where? Come on. Oh, stupid. That mouse doesn't work for that computer.
At the end of the conversation, you forgot to say hi, Hitler.
That might be the first time we've done that with two Jews in the building. There you go.
I was just thinking, it's like, oh, let's add another Jew for the Nazi news and see what happens.
Sure. A suburban...
Are you guys going to sue us? Are you going to sue us, Kevin, because it brings back too many bad memories?
Kevin's busy getting...
If I thought there was any money to get, I would.
Fair enough. And there's the real Jew in Kevin. It's all about the money with him.
Damn right.
Oh, there's that nasty Jew joke. I guess I have him after all. Anyway, a suburban Seattle city will pay more than $1.5 million to settle a dispute with a former assistant police chief who was disciplined for posting a Nazi rank insignia on his office door and joking about the Holocaust. Former Kent assistant police chief Derek Kermerzel, who had been with the department for nearly three decades, was initially given 2 weeks of unpaid leave after the 2020 incident. Outraged residents and members of the Jewish community prompted Mayor Dana Ralph to put Kermerzel on paid administrative leave and demand his resignation. The city's attempt to essentially discipline Kermerzel a second time led to a dispute between his lawyers and the city that appeared headed for litigation. But interim city chief administrative officer Arthur Pat Fitzpatrick, who is also the city attorney, said Friday the city had resolved the matter through negotiation. Ralph, in calling for Kermerzel's resignation in January, acknowledged that the decision to revisit the discipline issue would likely come at a high cost. The city said Friday it would pay him $1,520,000 to resign. Had the city simply fired him, the official says he likely would have won back his job through arbitration due to federal and state labor laws. An internal investigation concluded that Kermerzel knew the meaning of the insignia he placed above the nameplate on his office door in September 2020 that had that of an Obergruppenführer, a high official in Hitler's paramilitary Schutzstaffel, or SS, which was responsible for the systematic murders of millions of Jews and others in Europe during World War II. The insignia was taken down after 4 days when a detective in the investigation bureau, which Kermerzel commanded, filed a complaint. Kermerzel also was overheard joking about the Holocaust, according to the internal investigation. Ooh, rough route. Messages left by the newspaper with Kammerzell's attorney and with Kent Police Officers Association were not immediately returned. He should be forced to take down the insignia. Does anybody disagree with that?
No.
As long as he doesn't have to pick cotton.
I don't know why they can't. I mean, you can't force somebody to resign. You can't force somebody. But I don't understand why he couldn't be fired. Like,
first of all, this story, I read this story twice. It's terribly written because it leaves out so many facts that you need to know. Because he works for the police. There's contract issues. He's a member of a union. There's only certain ways they can be fired. I mean, it's a whole process, and they didn't talk about that process. And it was a really badly written story. But in the end, the fact that a guy in a police situation was able to put up Nazi paraphernalia on his office, knowing what it means. And having said anti-Semitic remarks, and he kept his job, and he could have either kept his job, but also got paid $1.5 million. It just blows my mind.
It makes like being an anti-Semite pays. That's essentially what this does. Do something stupid. We can't force you out, but you'll win the lottery. And what a terrible precedent this is.
Well, one of the things is that the police. Organizations, the PBA that backs up the police and their contracts, they get so many benefits. They get a lot of protection against, you know, being fired for, you know, nonsense reasons, but also they get protection from being fired for what most people in most jobs would be legitimate reasons, and they'd be out on their butt, and they would not be collecting a big fat severance pay and a pension. It also points out that, scarily enough, there has been a steady infiltration in the police ranks of people who are white supremacists and anti-Semites. And I support police for the most part, but the fact that there are people in our forces, you know, these paramilitary organizations in our country that are, you know, card-carrying members of these despicable groups frightens me. And here's a person who thinks that this was acceptable to do in his job. I mean, he might be a scumbag at home, and he might have Nazi paraphernalia all over the house. He might, eat breakfast out of, you know, a German soldier's hat. I don't know what this guy does at home, but as a police officer, he felt comfortable enough to do this in the workplace. That's disgusting.
All right. So we all agree. This is you should be able to fire somebody for this.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's this is a sweet story about whipped cream. Let's do that. It's now illegal for somebody who looks as young and supple as I do, for New Yorkers under age 21 to purchase whipped cream charges, according to state law. The law, which went into effect in November 2021, is meant to prevent teenagers from using whipped cream canisters to inhale nitrous oxide, otherwise known as whippets. The legislation specifically names whipped cream chargers, small steel cartridges of nitrous oxide used in whipped cream dispensers. Stores in Albany have started to ID shoppers looking to purchase canned whipped cream. The lawmaker who sponsored the bill later clarified that the legislation only targets whipped cream chargers and does not mean shoppers have to show ID for cans of whipped cream, but the chargers in the can of whipped cream, I guess. There's been a misrepresentation of the language and intent of the bill, and I'm not promoting Cool Whip. New York State Senator Joseph Addabbo said in a press release, "My bill is not intended to prevent people under the age of 21 from buying whipped cream dispensers, but the small individual charger or cartridge inside the whipped cream canister that is the target of this law." But it's in the canister of the whipped cream. So, anyway, approximately 1 in 5 young people have used inhalants like whippets by the time they reach 8th grade, according to the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. Abusing inhalants can cause damage to the parts of the brain that control thinking, moving, vision, and hearing. Ah, the good shit. And inhalants are invisible, volatile substances found in common household products that produce chemical vapors that are inhaled to induce psychoactive or mind-altering effects, according to a DEA fact sheet. Senator Addabbo of Queens said he sponsored the New York law after receiving complaints of empty canisters littering the streets. So this is a littering issue, is what this is. Forget about the brain damage. Listen, you want to snort this shit and cause brain damage, that's fine. But be neat. Can you be neat, you slobs? Anyway.
Can you go back to the little plastic baggies we used to find around, or the little crack canisters? Can you? They were so much smaller.
I'll tell you another thing.
The good old days.
I'll tell you, I have seen condoms on the street. It's time we stop letting kids use condoms. No more. No more condoms.
Because they can't be neat about this, getting rid of them.
Exactly. You know what? You pull out and do it on our chest like we did as kids. The need to limit the access of sale of whippets first became apparent after receiving constituent complaints about empty canisters on neighborhood streets using whippets piling up in our communities are not only an eyesore, but also indicative of a significant nitrous oxide abuse problem. No! We just like dessert. Nitrous oxide is a legal chemical for legitimate professional use, but when used inappropriately, it can be extremely lethal, Addabbo added. Sadly, young people buy and inhale this gas to get high because they mistakenly believe it's a safe substance. No, they don't think that far ahead. They just want to get high. They're not thinking about the repercussions. They're thinking, I want to get high. This law will eliminate easy access to this dangerous substance for our youth. All right, the charger is inside the whipped cream container. Like, I've never seen chargers sold separately. So I'm trying to find out what this guy is getting upset about.
It's used in like restaurants. It's used like in restaurants and commercial. It's like it's a condensed. It's just nitrous oxide, basically. It's just a the cartridge of nitrous oxide that. Why would somebody under 18 be
right? But like either? But like a kid couldn't get access to that. You can't go into Lowe's and pick that up. I'm guessing. So why do we need this law?
You can probably buy it online. I assume.
Yeah, probably. Or I don't know. Maybe in some restaurant places, you know, as a specialty item that you can get. I mean, I've never seen them for sale. But at first I was reading this thinking, you know, oh, this is so stupid. They can't buy whipped cream with an ID. Like, this is going to, you know, hot chocolate season is coming up. I'm going to have an issue. But the other thing is, then they were saying it's just the canisters themselves, the separate, and there must be a place that you can buy them, or else it would be an issue.
We're saying there must be, but none of us, and we go to different places, have ever seen this. So for this state senator to get all upset, well, it's not about the whipped cream. Well, it kind of is about the whipped cream, because your average kid is going to get it from whipped cream, I guess.
If you ever worked in a restaurant,
2 weeks,
there's always somebody, there were always busboys trying to scarf down the whipped cream canisters, and you end up with flat whipped cream. I think it was even a joke in the movie Waiting. Part of me, I guess the Republican part of me feels that this is like government overreach and just overregulation. And like, if kids want to get high, they're going to get high, and you're not going to stop them. The other part is like, why would these kids have to be buying these things anyway? Why not? Like it's almost like that. It's legislation that's being pushed by somebody. So they can put it on a campaign mailer to say we're protecting your kids.
But I mean,
it's not going to change a goddamn thing.
21. Yes. By the time you're 21, you can get much better shit than whipped cream. That seems like an awfully high age to protect the kid. Like if you're telling me 13-year-old, listen, you can't. You have to be 17. Which is still pretty high in my mind. If you really want to make a fakakta law, you have to be 17 to buy whipped cream. Okay, 21? That seems a lot. So what, I can't get, I'm living on my own, I'm in school, I want to get dessert, I don't drive, so I take the bus down, I don't have any ID, and now I can't get whipped cream? I can't get Ritty Whip now? I have to have Cool Whip?
You can still get whipped cream, that's what this is. This isn't whipped cream. These are canisters that recharge commercial whipped cream dispensers. This isn't. You can still go. You 14-year-old Davin can still go get Ready Whip, and if you want to sit and hail that, your eyes fall out.
All right, then why is the supermarket starting to ID people in Albany? If what you say is true,
I guess they might sell the nitrogen rechargers. I don't know.
That's not what the story says. It says they're IDing people buying whipped cream. That's what all the headlines were.
Stupid.
That's what all the headlines were. I wasn't trolling for whipped cream stories. I said, oh, well, there's a headline. And then
love those whipped cream stories.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
you always ruminate about the whipped cream.
They usually have a happy ending, unlike this one. I don't know. it just seems stupid. I guess it's the Republican in me. I guess I get a little Ronnie Reagan in me after all. Enough. And have you guys ever done a whippet? I've never done a whippet.
No. I never have.
So.
And you know what? I do get the point, though, that kids might be lured into thinking that this would be safer because whipped cream just seems so innocuous. I mean, if they were saying they were getting high, you know, sniffing Raid, then they might think, huh, look at the dead bugs, and I'm about to snort this. You know, and it smells disgusting when you spray it around. You know, I could see why whipped cream seems like, how bad could this be? So, I mean, I get that part, but you have to be 21 before you can buy whipped cream? Come on.
Well, listen, I think the real issue is they're not putting them in the trash.
Okay, wait, hold on.
What?
Hold on. I did a little extra research. Pip and I are right. It's not whipped cream. It's the whipped cream. Everything else was just the internet running amok as the internet does. He was banning the sale of whipped cream chargers, not pre-filled cans of whipped cream that you find in grocery stores. Whipping chargers are small bullet-shaped cartridges filled with nitrous oxide. They're used by professional bakers and cooks and reusable whipped cream dispensers, like I said.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's not the way the article reads, not least from Business Insider, which isn't some, like, little rag. I mean, Business Insider is a legitimate news source.
Well, they did actually say in the article that it's not the whipped cream canisters, it's the chargers.
Right, but what I'm telling you is nobody's... Apparently, some people are carting you for whipped cream.
Yeah,
apparently that was a myth. This article from Gothamist says that nobody was getting carted for whipped cream.
How do we know Gothamist is right? How do we know Gothamist is right? We don't know. We'll never know.
If that story makes sense and the other one doesn't.
You know what? You know what? We're going to have to send some children after they're done picking cotton into ShopRite to buy some whipped cream. We'll have to see what happens.
I'll see if my baby can buy whipped cream.
In New Jersey? Well, sure. You live in New Jersey.
I'm not much for babies, but your baby is adorable.
You live in New Jersey. I'm sure your baby can buy anything it wants.
Yeah.
New Jersey is a godless state. All right, let's do some.
And that's why I live here.
Yes. Yes.
And we all should know because we're all born there.
Listen, I've seen it too many times. The kid goes right from the tit to the canister, right from milk to whipped cream. Seen it time and time again. And, you know, you're nonchalant about this. I'm sorry, Kevin. Your kid's going to crawl down an unfortunate path. It's a shame.
It's all about that dairy obsession.
Have a hell of a time while he does it.
Yeah, well,
you know, breast milk is just a gateway dairy.
It is a gateway dairy. I mean, look what the kid's doing with warm milk. Imagine when you give it cold and fluffy. Kid doesn't have a chance. And Kevin doesn't care because Kevin can't be bothered because he's a Gen X type of parent. It's like, well, I was a latchkey kid, so it's okay. It's all right if my kid has all the dairy he wants. Whatever. You'll be sorry. You'll be sorry. All right.
I don't even know what I'm going to yell at anymore.
Just because of your nasty Jew jokes. All right, let's do some drunks in the news. I keep on hitting.
Welcome to Drunks in the News.
All right, as we like to do with our drunks in the news, we will do a Benjamin. Kevin, are you familiar with Benjamin Franklin drinking terms?
Benjamin Franklin drinking terms?
He apparently came up with over 200 synonyms for getting shit-faced.
I did not. No.
Well, there you go. So a learned man like Mr. Israel was not aware of this. But, so every time we do a Drunks in the News, we reveal a new synonym for getting plastered. So this week's Benjamin Franklin drinking term is fuzzled. So, yeah, you know, when Kevin's son is a teenager, either the teen boy might get fuzzled or Kevin might get fuzzled, trying to control his young lad. Fuzzled.
Spell this.
F-U-Z-L apostrophe D. Fuzzled.
Fuzzled.
Fuzzled. By the way.
Something that sounds like MC Fuzzled, like that's coming.
I got to tell you, fuzzled is not a terrible synonym. Because if you're drunk, yeah, I could say, wow, I really feel fuzzled. It's like fucked up and fuzzy. I kind of like fuzzled.
And fuzzy is your tongue.
Yeah. How do you feel? A little fuzzled. I feel a little fuzzled right now. All right.
I like this one.
Yeah, I do too. Miller High Life is switching things up with the release of a beer-flavored ice cream bar. A limited edition ice cream dive bar rolls out on Monday in celebration of the 100th anniversary of the ice cream bar. Dairy owner William Isaly invented the Klondike bar in 1922. What would you do for a Klondike bar? I'd inhale whipped cream. Made in collaboration with boozy confectioner Tipsy Scoop, each bar is infused with real Miller High Life beer, plus ingredients designed to channel the vibe of a classic dive bar, including a peanut swirl inspired by the peanut shells found on barroom floors, gooey caramel to recall stickiness of these floors, dark chocolate to evoke the dark wood and dim lighting, and even a hint of tobacco smoke flavor for the aroma of smoke that doubles as cologne for those in the bar, according to a press release. The treat is also sprinkled with carbonated candy to infuse a bit of effervescence into the bar. Tipsy founder and CEO Melissa Tavs comes from a family of ice cream makers. Her family brought gelato from Italy to Scotland in the 1800s. I was always interested in perfecting my homemade ice cream recipe and initially added a teaspoon of booze to soften my ice cream because it was coming out all icy on the sides, she told CNET. She enjoys ice cream as a medium for booze because it enhances the flavor and holds the alcohol content. Unlike baking or cooking with booze, when the alcohol is burnt off, she added. Six packs of Miller High Life ice cream dive bars are available to adults 21 and older. Get it with your whipped cream canister, kids. On the Tipsy Scoop website and goldbelly.com for $36. Individual bars can be found at Tipsy Scoop's three New York City scoop shops or Barlers for $6. All right. Would you guys want this? Would you want to try this?
God, no.
No? Doesn't sound...
God, no.
What about
first of all? Of all the beers, I never think of like Miller. Like Miller is a delicious beer that I really want to spend some time with. Miller was like a beer that you bought in college because you couldn't afford decent beer, and you drank on volume. It was nobody drinks Miller and thinks that's a tasty beverage. Almost had an ice cream.
I gotta be honest. I didn't even know Miller High Life was still a thing. I had no idea.
I know.
It's from the Rockies West. You can get it.
Is that true?
What? I don't know, but I don't remember ever seeing High Life recently. But that's the whole thing is just but now I like now I'm kind of want like I'm I, like way in the back of my head I'm like I kind of want to try it just to make sure it's as gross as it sounds like a little bit.
I got to tell you, before I read the story, I'm like, no, gross. I don't like the taste of beer enough for that. But then when they start adding like the other things they put into it. I mean, all right. I'm a little intrigued. You know, where they're adding the caramel and the peanuts and everything. I mean, I don't like the reasoning behind it.
You can get ice cream that has all that stuff that doesn't taste like beer.
Right, but I want to see how the but it will lure me in to try the beer ice cream.
I never had a beer and was like, you know what would make this better? Fudge.
Yeah, but you know what? But you know what makes everything better? Fudge. So,
I like the idea of trying beer flavored ice cream because I do like beer and I like ice cream. So it's like, huh, there's been weirder things that I thought that sounds gross and then I ended up liking them. But, you know, okay, then they want to bring you down the path and say, I want to invite you to think about the stickiness of the floors with caramel.
Yeah, it's a little much.
Peanuts, okay. But then, we want to infuse it with the smokiness of cigarettes?
Yeah.
Ew!
Yeah.
What the fuck? No. No. No.
Well, there's
another. I'm sure somebody used to smoke, but I used to like try to get away from the smoke coming out of the cigarette, sucking it in for some disgusting reason. Pleasurable. Smelling it when you're done with it. Gross.
Well, I'm going
putting that in beer flavored ice cream. Really, really triple gross.
I'm going to add in a little hint of salt for the tears that I felt when it was closing time and I went home alone. So
True. Oh, my God. No, if you had just a beer-flavored ice cream with the little pieces of pretzel in it, I would be willing to try that. But when they... Oh, God, when they added cigarette smoke in it, I just lost my damn mind.
I am going to have a Miller High Life with a hint, a soupçon, if you will, of tuna fish because to reenact how my finger smelled the next day when I was lucky at a fun time at the bar to recreate that magical feeling. What, no? No, no?
No.
What
the fuck? No.
What, Kevin?
So much, you don't even know. We don't even have time to list.
What? No.
But, ew! Ew!
This idea ranks right up there with Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina-flavored candles. Like, it's ridiculous. I don't know how, like, there was definitely a group of people sitting around the table where this was pitched, and somebody was like, yeah, that's a good idea, yeah. Like, it's insane that this got to the marketing phase.
It's not.
It's just ridiculous.
People love Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina. That product did very well. And people love beer. And I'll tell you what, people who drink a lot of beer love Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina. Two great tastes that go great together. How about a Gwyneth Paltrow beer? Vagina beer. How about that? That would be nice. You know, it would have to be vanilla. It would be like a vanilla ice cream. But, you know, very frigid and cold. I think that would be... What? No? No.
Okay. I'm burning one of my sperm candles right now.
No, no, that's... honey, no. That's Mr. Helix you're burning. Stop that.
Oh, sorry, honey. Let me help put you out.
That's not a candle. That's his wick. Knock it off. All right.
It looked like a candle.
Yes. All right.
Sorry about those burns.
So Pip likes it, but doesn't like the descriptions. Kevin is repulsed by it. And originally I was like, well, this isn't a good idea. But then when they gave me the descriptions and the yummy stuff they put in, I'm like, all right, I'll try it. I don't need to buy a six pack, but I'll buy one for $5. I will buy one for $5.
Well, I'll tell you something. I friggin' love the name Dive Bar.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, well, you just don't like it. Maybe if it was a better beer, Kevin would be on board. How about like a nice Sam Adams? A Sam Adams.
You know what? Sam Adams is actually where my head went immediately. I was like, maybe if it's Sam Adams, I could buy into it.
See, so it's not the idea you don't like. It's you don't like Miller beer. That's what it is.
I would like Guinness ice cream.
Yeah, but no.
I'm pretty sure they have Guinness ice cream. I feel like that's
a thing? Oh, there we go.
Budweiser ice cream. It tastes like Clydesdale's. Yum!
But only their asses.
Well, that's why, Kevin, you're a taste expert. So, not enough ass. You need to put more ass in it. We have a reputation to live up to. What's wrong with you? All right.
Hey, ass is my territory on this show.
Most certainly.
Stay in your lane, buddy.
All right. We're going to take our last break, then we're going to come back with a quick bitter on Twitter. On the break, we got new music from Be Infinite with Flying High and MP Gray featuring Rudiger with In the Maze. And you can learn more about both of them at khb-music.de.